Figure Facts for Life.
We just want you to be healthy.
Health and happiness.
If you pay attention to what goes in your body, you'll be amazed at the results.
Fuel, nourish, and heal your body.
Eating healthy, well, that's everything.
Put the right fuel in. Take care of your engine.
Here's Roberta Gennaro.
Welcome to Figure Facts for Life podcast. I'm your host, Roberta Gennaro. I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist with over 30 years clinical nutrition experience. I am committed to share my expertise of the power within foods to fuel, nourish, and heal our bodies. March is National Nutrition Month, and it's a platform for registered dietitian nutritionists nationally to share nutrition information with practical ways to apply it, and in doing so, enhance the health and well-being of those receiving it. It's also Colon Cancer Awareness Month. Therefore, our focus today will be talking to Jill Hamilton Reeves, a doctorate-level research dietitian that specializes in the study of nutrition and cancer at the University of Kansas. Be sure to listen for her pearls of wisdom as it relates to your colon health later in this podcast. And with that, I'd like to welcome Jill Hamilton Reeves. Thank you for joining us today, Jill.
Well, thank you for having me. I just love the mission of your podcast and the work that you do.
Thank you so much. Well, you know what? I was thinking when I was putting this podcast idea together that I really never hear a lot about the research that dietitians are doing. And some of my best friends are dietitians with a doctorate degree in nutrition. And I thought, wow, you know, why not give them a voice? I only hear about it when I go to the conferences, you know, for the academy. So as that being said, I wanted you to share a little bit with our listeners about how you became interested in nutrition and cancer research.
Well, Roberta, thank you. You're right. Many of us PhD nutritionists get our voice either behind a podium or through our writing and manuscripts, and that just doesn't get to people to use every day. So thank you for thinking of us.
No problem.
And you asked how I got into the field.
Yes.
So essentially what had happened is when I was in high school and early college years, I was observing the effects of cancer in the later stages for three of my four grandparents and the impact that had on my family. And there were just a lot of things that that really caught my attention. And one of them was at the time, it was in the 90s, the early 90s. At the time, there was a very heavy focus on killing the cancer, but not necessarily focused on the patient. And,
oh, I agree.
And I saw a lot of needs.
Yeah, I actually,
yeah,
my grandmother,
nutritionally and
yeah,
exercise.
I was just going to share with you, my grandmother, she had liver cancer and they started chemo on her. And then she abscessed a tooth and she was like miserable. And she said to me, she says, you know what? I think I decided I don't want to do this anymore. I mean, she ended up living 9 months after that one course of chemo and they had told her 3 months, but it was just awful what she was experiencing. I know that's, you know, that's, gosh, in 1994, so many years ago, they've come a long way. But I think that what you're doing is so important. And if we can find a cure for cancer, if there's some compounds in foods that can help. I know you mentioned to me that you did your dissertation looking at prostate cancer and soy protein. Can you share a little bit about that with our listeners? And then we'll move on to current research that you're doing.
Yeah, sure. So, again, this was a long time ago.
Right.
So that would have been early 2000s. And
right.
So at the time, it was the norm to study one nutrient or one food at a time. And I learned a ton from that process about randomized trials and how to conduct research. We did find some promising results with soy protein decreasing the androgen receptor expression level. So essentially the hormone signaling within the prostate tissue itself without affecting hormone levels in men that would affect, you know, things like testosterone and estrogen that are circulating in the body. So it was promising, and yet really, the field has moved and matured so much to realize that one food, one nutrient at a time isn't going to get us there. It's really the patterns of the foods that we eat, that if we can maximize that, then we're really onto something.
Right. Absolutely. And that no one food is the bad guy, right? It's it's kind of looking at the whole diet and what it's contributing, and patterns over time as well. I think that also there's some research talking about vegetable proteins and a higher vegetable diet consumption overall is recommended. And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So you had mentioned that, the focus of this podcast was really going to be on colorectal cancer,
right,
which is a great timing for the month. And there's strong evidence that plants, fiber-containing foods. So, of course, our vegetables and fruits and whole grains are great foods for contributing fiber to our diet. Whole grains are really helpful for decreasing the risk of colorectal cancer.
And so the protein sources, nothing really out there saying one protein source over another is better at this point. It's more about the fiber content of the foods that contain that vegetable protein?
Great question. So there's actually more data really from the population level and also some basic science showing that proteins, in looking at proteins, there's actually more data showing harm from some foods rather than benefit from certain protein foods.
Right, so, and we're gonna touch on that when we cover all your pearls of wisdom for recommendations for colon cancer as we move forward. So we'll bring that back towards the end of the podcast.
Okay.
But I really want you to have some time to focus on sharing the research that you're currently doing. Did I read on the website for University of Kansas that you got a huge grant from the NIH to do a study?
Yeah, well, the most exciting thing about it's a phase 3 trial, and it's a trial that is leveraging our clinical trial network that normally is used to run trials where we test drugs. And that's kind of how the system was really built with that in mind. And that's a great option to be more frugal with our resources as a nation and how we spend our money on research.
Right.
What's fantastic is this group that helps facilitate these trials saw the promise of using nutrition around surgery for getting a bladder removed to reduce complications from that surgery. And now we have a trial that's open across the nation there in Chicago, and then wherever else your listeners are, they likely have a medical center near them. They're getting their bladder removed where they could participate in the trial. And the fantastic thing is, as you're celebrating dietitians, is we don't have a lot of dietitians that get to lead trials at this scale. So I feel like it really is a vote of confidence for our discipline and the role that we're taking in helping with cancer care and with cancer outcomes.
Right. I think for years, in clinics across the nation, dietitians have been experiencing just really amazing, what you would say, close to miraculous changes in their patients. I had a client who came in on 55 units of insulin twice a day, and after 6 months and about 50 pounds weight loss, she was off insulin altogether. She was type 2 diabetic and just on a small level of an oral agent to manage her sugar. So it was a huge change for her, and something that, again, that's just one example of what we see clinically every day, that the power of changing the way people choose their foods and a healthier way of eating really contributes to improved health overall. So
absolutely.
The research that you are working on right now is with cancer, and did you say with bladder cancer?
Yes. So the surgery to remove the bladder is the gold standard surgery, but unfortunately it's a really major surgery. And 2 out of every 3 patients undergo the surgery end up getting a complication. 1 in 4 get an infection.
Oh.
And our preliminary data, our smaller trial that kind of gave us the information and the clue to chase this in a larger setting, showed a reduced rate of postoperative complications, reduced rate of infections, and taking nutrition drinks before and after surgery that have some extra ingredients in them to help support the immune system after having, being cut open and having this major surgery.
Right. I mean, nutrition plays a major role in healing, and I think that, gosh, when I was working in the hospitals in some of the units, nutrition wasn't paramount. It wasn't being focused on like it should have been. And there were a lot of infections happening that maybe would not have had they started nourishing their patient earlier. So I think nowadays you see them really trying to start postoperatively pretty soon after to get the nutrition in so the person's body can fight infection and defend itself.
I just wanted to mention that we were backing up the clock a little bit more and starting before the surgery. So helping to build nutrition and some residual, you know, so that when they do undergo the surgery, they're ready and they're not just catching up with the postoperative feeding. So it's pre and postoperative feeding.
Pre and post.
I just wanted to clarify that really quick.
That makes absolute sense, because like anything, you want to make sure that your body's able to fight for itself, and our immune system needs the nutrition to do that. So you mentioned that there are locally in Chicago sites that are bringing in participants for the study. Do you have a phone number or do you have an email that you want me to share with our listeners if they are interested in being a part of that study?
Yeah, so Dr. Joshua Meeks is the surgeon that is leading the effort there. So if people Google search him, you'll be able to find where the trial is being held.
And how do you spell his last name?
Main lead. Meeks is M-E-E-K-S.
Is he out of one of the major medical centers here in Chicago?
Yes, he is. And you would think I would know that off the top of my head, but I don't want to misspeak and then put him at the wrong place.
Okay, so let's just say, Google Dr. Joshua Meeks, M-E-E-K-S, if you would like to be a part of the clinical trial. And it will say, they'll let you know what the guidelines are. And what are the guidelines for the participants?
So they need to be a candidate for cystectomy.
Okay.
And that's the name of the surgery to remove the bladder.
The bladder. Okay. Due to cancer, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So now we mentioned, let's move along. I mentioned earlier that March is Colon Cancer Awareness Month. So I have to ask you, what pearls of wisdom do you have for our listeners related to nutrition and cancer prevention, especially as it relates to colon cancer?
Yeah, absolutely. I apologize for not being sequential here. Josh is out of Northwestern. I thought that was the case, but I just thought I would Google search for your listeners just so they can find him.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, he's in Northwestern.
Okay.
Yeah. But I will get back on topic. I had that thought. I'm pretty sure he's at Northwestern, but I wanted to confirm before we put that out there on your podcast.
I appreciate that.
So back to the question.
Yes.
Colorectal cancer and prevention.
Yes.
So I had already kind of planted the seed that foods that contain high amounts of fiber are good for decreasing risk. And really the thought there is the more fiber that people consume, then usually the more regular they are. And so that's healthy for your GI tract.
Right.
Whole grains by themselves as a food, group are also associated with decreased risk. Dairy products and high calcium diets are associated with decreased risk of colon cancer. Physical activity itself, which I realize isn't nutrition, but physical activity and nutrition kind of go hand in hand. And of course, body weight. So as you gain body fat, a person's risk for colorectal cancer increases, and that is thought to be somewhat an indirect relationship with how your insulin and related hormones that encourage the growth of cancer are affected, and then also the smoldering inflammation that we talk about with having excess body fat that can contribute to the growth of cancer as well.
Right. And even sugar is, too much sugar. I think, when it comes to dietary changes, there's, if somebody says, don't eat this, don't eat that, I think it's hard for people to wrap their brain around that. But if it's, it's excessive amounts of these types of foods, excessive amounts of fat, excessive amounts of sugars that actually lead to obesity. If you're able to then talk with a registered dietitian, we just had registered dietitian nutritionist day last week on March 13th. And, we're National Nutrition Month, and we're just trying to get the message out to people that they can still have their cake and eat it too, so to speak, but they just have to know what portions are reasonable that will not cause ill health and sickness in the body. I agree with you. Most people that I've counseled over the years do not get enough dietary fiber. And with that said, your transit time increases, this bolus of food stays in the intestines longer and can cause cellular changes and toxins to build up in the system. So, you know, shout out to everybody listening. Eat your fruits and vegetables, and we'll be talking more about how much and all that. But also, I think red meat and processed meats are out there in the media getting kind of a bad rap. And what do you have to say about those items as it relates to colon cancer?
Yeah, well, they don't have the same level of risk. And I think that's important to talk about. Okay. So, you know, processed meat is considered worse as far as increasing risk for colon cancer than red meat. So,
and why is that? Is it because it has nitrates or, you know, preservatives in it that are not that great for our bodies? Or what is it exactly?
Yeah, it's the nitrates that then contribute to the production of N-nitroso compounds.
Okay.
And those compounds can damage the lining of the gut.
Okay.
And that actually is what is going to be increasing risk.
So now if you have a mixed meal you have a normal portion of a processed meat, maybe, you know, a couple ounces on a sandwich, so to speak, but you purchase one that has no nitrates and no preservatives in it, it's all natural, maybe it's uncured, and you put a big bolus of vegetables and a nice salad with that, different scenario then?
You know what? That seems very logical. As a researcher, though, I can say that I haven't really seen any data testing that, but
okay.
I think logical also works, right?
Right, right.
So practically speaking, eating foods that are going to help get the food through the gut quicker,
right?
It would reduce the risk for contact with the lining. And then thinking about, well, what is that food actually composed of? And if it isn't processed with, you know, in the typical way, then would that be less risk? I know there are people looking at it. I just haven't seen those data to give you really hard and fast, evidence on that.
And Jill, what for those of listening in, if they would like to reach out to you, what is your email?
Well, I have a hyphenated name, which okay. is a blessing and a curse. So my username is really long. It's jhamilton-reeves at KU, M as in Mary, C as in cat, .edu.
Okay.
But if you can't remember all of that, or I said it too quickly, if you type in Hamilton-Reeves into Google, you will find me. There are not many Hamilton Reeves out there.
That's great to know. Well, I just applaud you for the work you're doing. And I think one last takeaway is that if you are barbecuing, because we're coming into spring and summer, don't eat the burnt stuff, because that is carcinogenic.
Right.
But I want to thank you, Jill, for joining us today. And thank everybody who's listening in for tuning in to Figure Facts for Life podcast. Be sure to subscribe to stay in the know on cutting edge dietetic and nutrition information. Hop over to Facebook and Instagram at Figure Facts LLC, all one word. Tune into our next episode when we talk to Judy Manisco, a dietitian in private practice. I'm Roberta Gennaro. Thank you for joining me, and ciao ciao for now.